welcome back to the Cory Doctorow podcast. Back after a one-week hiatus. I was in Los Angeles last week. Nice to see so many of you people at Claremont McKenna College and Dark Delights in Burbank. And a special hello to the children at the Pat Brown Charter School in South Central, who I got a chance to drop in on my way to the airport and meet and chat with. All very delightful chances to sit down and talk with people. I'm back and a little groggy. I spent the weekend with my family and some friends out in the country in a house that a bunch of us rented together, and I was a little too aggressive in carrying around my three-year-old, and my back has gone right out, so I'm a little groggy because I couldn't really sleep last night on it. I'm really hoping that things get better. I'm seeing the physiotherapist tomorrow. He's going to check in on the progress after my hip surgery and maybe fix things up with my back after my overzealousness. If you weren't in LA last week, but you were still hoping to see me in person at some point, I'll be at the London Book Fair next week, April 11th, doing something for English Pen and also a debate. I'll be at the How the Light Gets In Festival in Hay on Wye, for those of you in Wales, on May the 30th. And I'll be at the Personal Democracy Forum in New York around the 5th and 6th of June. So I'm hoping to catch you at one of those, if nowhere else. And I'll, of course, keep you up to date on more upcoming appearances. So I still don't have anything new I want to read to you yet. I'm working on this short story for Intel's chief futurist called Knights of the Rainbow Table. And I reckon by this time next week I should be okay to read it aloud to you. But in the meantime, and it's not quite there, so I'm going to do a brief reading today from another one of my favorite Mark Twain stories. This is a comic short called The Petrified Man, and it's really one of my favorites. And it's very much in keeping with the spirit of the April the 1st weekend that we've just gone through. The Petrified Man by Mark Twain. Now, to show how really hard it is to foist a moral or a truth upon an unsuspecting public through a burlesque without entirely and absurdly missing one's mark, I will here set down two experiences of my own in this thing. In the fall of 1862, in Nevada and California, the people got to running wild about the extraordinary petrifications and other natural marvels. One could scarcely pick up a paper without finding in it one or two glorified discoveries of this kind. The mania was becoming a little ridiculous. I was a brand new local editor in Virginia City, and I felt called upon to destroy this growing evil. We all have our benignant fatherly moods at one time or another, I suppose. I chose to kill the petrification mania with a delicate, a very delicate satire. But maybe it was altogether too delicate, for nobody ever perceived the satire part of it at all. I put my scheme in the shape of the discovery of a remarkable petrified man. I had had a temporary falling out with Mr. the new coroner and justice of the peace of Humboldt, and I thought I might as well touch him up a little at the same time and make him ridiculous, thus combining pleasure with business. So I told, in patient, belief-compelling detail, about the finding of a petrified man at Gravelly Ford, exactly 120 miles over a breakneck mountain trail from where lived. How all the savants of the immediate neighborhood had been to examine it. It was notorious that there was not a living creature within 50 miles of there, except a few starving Indians, some crippled grasshoppers, and four or five buzzards out of meat and too feeble to get away. How those savants all pronounced the petrified man to have been in a state of complete petrifaction for over 10 generations, and then, with a seriousness that I ought to have been ashamed to assume, I stated that as soon as Mr. heard the news, he summoned a jury, mounted his mule, and posted off, with noble reverence for official duty, on that awful 5 days' journey, through alkali, sagebrush, peril of body, and imminent starvation, to hold an inquest on this man that had been dead and turned to everlasting stone for more than 300 years. And then, my hand being in, so to speak, I went on, with the same unflinching gravity, to state that the jury returned a verdict that deceased came to his death from protracted exposure. This only moved me to higher flights of imagination, and I said that the jury, with the charity so characteristic of pioneers, then dug a grave, and were about to give the petrified man Christian burial, when they found that for ages a limestone sediment had been trickling down the face of the stone against which he was sitting, and this stuff had run under him and cemented him fast to the bedrock, that the jury, who were all silver miners, canvassed the difficulty for a moment, and then got out their powder and fuse and proceeded to drill a hole under him in order to blast him from his position, when Mr. with that delicacy so characteristic of him, forbade them, observing that it would be little less than sacrilege to do such a thing. From the beginning to end, the petrified man's squib was a string of roaring absurdities, albeit they were told with an unfair pretense of truth that even imposed upon me to some extent, and I was in some danger of believing in my own fraud. But I really had no desire to deceive anybody, and no expectation of doing it. I depended on the way the petrified man was sitting to explain to the public that he was a swindle. Yet I purposely mixed that up with other things, hoping to make it obscure. And I did. I would describe the position of one foot, and then say that his right thumb was against the side of his nose, then talk about his other foot, and presently come back and say that the fingers of his right hand were spread apart, then talk about the back of his head a little, and return to say that the left thumb was hooked into the right little finger, then ramble off about something else, and by, drift back again and remark that the fingers of the left hand were spread like those of the right. But I was a little too ingenious. I mixed it up rather too much, and so all that description of the attitude, as a key to the humbuggery of the article, was entirely lost, for nobody but me ever discovered and comprehended the particular and suggestive position of the petrified man's hands. As a satire on the petrifaction mania, or anything else, my petrified man was a disheartening failure. For everybody received him in innocent good faith, and I was stunned to see the creature I had begotten to pull down the wonder business with, and bring derision upon it, calmly exalted to the grand chief place in the list of the genuine marvels our Nevada had produced. I was so disappointed at the curious miscarriage of my scheme, that at first I was angry, and did not like to think about it. But by and by, when the exchanges began to come in with the petrified man copied and guilelessly glorified, I began to feel a soothing, secret satisfaction. And as my gentleman's field of travels broadened, and by the exchanges I saw that he steadily and implacably penetrated territory after territory, state after state, and land after land, till he swept the great globe and culminated in sublime and unimpeached legitimacy in the August London Lancet, my cup was full, and I said I was glad I had done it. I think that for about 11 months, as nearly as I can remember, Mr. Daily mailbag continued to be swollen by the addition of half a bushel of newspapers hailing from many climes, with a petrified man in them, marked around with a prominent belt of ink. I sent them to him. I did it for spite, not for fun. He used to shovel them into his backyard and curse, and every day during all those months the miners, his constituents, for miners never quit joking a person when they get started, would call on him and ask if he could tell them where they could get hold of a paper with a petrified man in it. He could have accommodated a continent with them. I hated in those days, and these things pacified me and pleased me. I could not have gotten more real comfort out of him without killing him. The end.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, W-R-Y-N-E-C-K Studio, @gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.